You can guess how much sleep I had that first night at Schoenhausen. Well-liquored as I was when Bersonin and Kraftstein helped me to bed and pulled my boots off, my mind was all too clear. I lay there, fully clothed, listening to the wind whining round the turrets and watching the candle shadows flickering on the high ceiling, and my heart was pumping as though I'd run a race. The room was dank as a tomb, but the sweat fairly ran off me. How the devil had it all happened, and what the devil was I to do? I actually wept as I damned the folly that had ever made me come to Germany. I could have been safe at home, pleasuring myself groggy with Elspeth, and sponging off her skinflint father, facing nothing worse than the prospect of bare leading her family and society. And here I was, imprisoned in a lonely castle, with five dangerous lunatics bent on dragooning me into a hare-brained adventure that was certain to put my head in a noose. And if I resisted, or tried to escape, they'd wipe me out of existence as readily as they'd swat a fly. However, as usual, once I'd cursed and blubbered myself empty, my mind started searching for some ray of comfort, anything to cling to. For if you are coward enough, your vainest hopes can be magnified beyond all reason. 6 weeks, Bismarck had said, before this impossible wedding. Say 5 weeks or a month at least before my substitution for Carl Gustav had to take place. Surely much could happen in that time. Clever and wary as they were, Bismarck's gang couldn't watch me all the time. In 4 weeks there must be a moment when such a practiced absconder as myself could cut and run for it. A horse, that was all I needed, and a look at the sun or the stars, and I was confident that my terror could outstrip Bismarck's vengeance. God knew how far away the frontier was, but I was willing to wager my neck that I could reach it faster than any rider living. My neck, of course, was exactly what I would be wagering. With these jolly musings, I passed the night, imagining a score of madcap means of escape, and as many nightmares in which Bismarck caught me in the act. It was all a waste of time, of course. Within me I knew that anyone who could plot as subtly as he had done wasn't going to give me the ghost of a hope of escaping. And I had a shrewd suspicion that if a chance did arise, I'd be too funky to take it. These fellas would stop at nothing. They proved it, too, on my first morning at Schoenhausen. The great oaf Kraftstein summoned me at dawn, and I was pulling on my boots when Rudy strode in, very fresh and whistling cheerfully. Rot him. "And did your highness sleep well?" says he. "I trust your highness is sufficiently rested after your journey?" I told him sourly that I wasn't in a mood for his comedy. "Oh, no comedy at all," says he. "High drama. And unless you want it to develop into tragedy, you'll act as you've never acted before. From this moment you are his highness Prince Carl Gustav, blood royal and lord's anointed. Do you follow me? You speak German and nothing else. Your Danish will take care of presently, and you will comport yourself as a member of the Danish ruling house." "Talk sense," I growled. "I don't know how." "No, but we're going to teach you, your highness," says he, and for once his eyes had no laughter in them. "So, the first thing is to make you look the part. All right, Kraftstein." And then and there, despite my protests, Kraftstein sat me in a chair and set to work, first cropping my hair and whiskers, and then soaping and shaving my skull. It was a long and unpleasant process, and when it was done and I looked in the glass, I could have burst into tears. The ghastly creature with his great gleaming dome of a skull was a horrid parody of me, my face surmounted by a naked convict head. "Damn you," I burst out. "Damn you, you've ruined me." I expected them to mock me, of course, but neither twitched so much as a muscle. "Your highness will be under the necessity of shaving your head daily," murmured Rudy. "Kraftstein will instruct you. Now, may I suggest that your highness wears uniform today?" They had that, too. Rather a trim rig, I had to admit, in bottle green, which fitted me perfectly and would have given me a fine dashing air if it hadn't been for that bald monstrosity above the collar. "Admirable," says Rudy, standing back from me. "May I compliment your highness on your appearance? Drop that, blast you. I snarled at him. If I have to play your damn game, you'll spare me your infernal nonsense until it starts, at least. I'm your prisoner, ain't I? Isn't that enough for you?